I would like to welcome you to our first keynote session tonight. Before I introduce our speaker, let's start the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now I would like to present our Friday night speaker, Bob L. from New Jersey. Bob is going to speak to us for 45 minutes, and we'll follow that with 15 minutes of Q&A. So Bob, you're on.
All right, thank you, Cindy. Let me just start by saying how grateful I am to be here with you all. It is a WE program, and it's just so wonderful to be here all together. It's 10 o'clock at night, but I don't feel like it because, you know, it's wonderful just to be in a meeting with you and to talk with you. So as Cindy said, I'm Bob L. I live in New Jersey. I came in a program to qualify. I came in a program November 3rd, 2003, so just over 17 years. My abstinence date is March 11th of 2004, so over 16 years. And by the grace of my higher power, I've given away 120 pounds. I have a picture of me pretty much at my top weight, if you can see that, right around 300 pounds then. But what I also want to share is that I say I'm a compulsive eater because my story has both. I'm also an exercise bulimic. So I really got a high from losing weight. And so I was, as I like to say, I was the good Bob when I was losing weight. I was the bad Bob when I was gaining weight. So even when I was in program and lost my weight in the first year, I had gotten down to a very, very low weight, and I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. And it wasn't until actually a friend came to me in OA and says, you know what, I think you may have lost too much weight. So, but I'll share about more of that as I go forward. So I first want to say that I love your theme for the convention. Each one, reach one, share the hope. And what an awesome theme that is. It reminds me first of the fifth tradition. So each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And it also reminds me of our responsibility pledge, which I personally take. And I say each and every day, actually. So always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. And it really makes me think of all the people who have helped me along the way. I am so amazed at our fellowship and how we help each other. It first makes me think of my first sponsor, how he extended his hand and heart to me. You know, I'm just incredible, the giving heart that our sponsors have to us, and the fact that I'm no longer alone when I have a sponsor. It also makes me think of a woman who, to me, was an angel. her name was Nancy. She cared enough to take me to a place called Intergroup because there were men sponsors there. So not only did I find a sponsor there, who was the gentleman I was just talking about, but I also learned about service and what that was all about. And that's been a great part of my story and a wonderful part. So, and then taking a step back, I also think of a woman named Doris. She was the woman that picked up the phone when I called on November 3rd of 2003. She was a contact for the meeting. And that conversation got me to that meeting that first night. If she didn't answer, if she didn't return the call, then I may not have come. And all this might not have been possible. So that's how important those little pieces of service, and that each one, reach one, share the hope. It just means to me is that I have so much work to do. Even if I am abstinent today, which I'm so grateful to have my abstinence today, and I choose to be abstinent today, what else can I do? You know, what else can I do for the suffering compulsive eater? That is something that is always on my mind. And that's why I'm here today. I am an introvert, I'll say right up front. And I have had difficulty sharing in front of large groups. And I see we're at 229 participants right now. That would qualify. I remember the first time I ever shared at an OA meeting, I broke out in sweat. And I say all these things because by the grace of my higher power, he has given me a purpose in life to do things that I once thought never were possible. And speaking in front of people is one of them. So if you are an introvert or you are a shy person, like I have been my entire life, these things are possible for you too. And I just say that because there is hope in that, because I couldn't believe, you know, what I'm doing now, it would ever be possible. I'm actually hoping to see some people. I did something crazy, like led a whole retreat about 10 years ago. I was asked to lead a retreat out in the Seattle area. So I'm hoping to see some people that I might recognize from there. And that was unbelievable to me at the time. So there's amazing things that God has allowed me to do, and I'll share a little bit of that in my story. So going back, I'll share one more thing about what the theme reminds me of is there was a woman named Martha who listened to me sharing about not liking myself, really hating the way that I looked. My weight, and she told me about OA, and she wasn't even in OA. It still took me 3 years from hearing from her to actually go to a meeting, but she planted the seed. And I share that because when I share the message with someone who isn't in program, say, and just share what my experience, strength, and hope, I don't know what's going to happen with that conversation. And it may take that person 3 years to ever go to a meeting. And it took me 3 years. And look where I am now. I'm so grateful that she said that, because I didn't know about OA at the time. So that's part of my responsibility now, is to carry the message, to be the message, to share the message. So I'll go back to the start for me. And I said, you know, I was a shy kid. I was an introvert. You know, my parents were poor. I was the youngest of seven. They were poor. My parents were poor growing up. And what I learned from my conversations with my mom later, they always provided food. And that was very important to them. The least they could do was provide food. And as they got more money, they bought more and more food. And food was love to them. And I didn't realize that that was the case, that that's was how they were showing love. They wanted to provide to their children what they did not receive, what they were unable to have when they were children. So I blame my mom a lot for when I was heavy. And when I was being the youngest of seven, when all the kids moved out, my mom still cooked for seven. And I didn't mind so much, because I was eating all the leftovers, and I was, you know, I was gaining weight by doing that. And it was funny because, you know, being an Italian family, my mom would say, "Mangia, mangia, mangia, eat." And then she would then say, "You know what, Bob, you're getting a little heavy. You know, maybe you should lose a little weight." So it was like, I was getting all these mixed messages. So it was a little tough growing up that way. But mostly it was inside of me, which was the issue, is that how I felt about myself, the people pleasing that I did, and, you know, the low self-esteem that I had. I was heavy as a child, but I still had some friends. I laugh because I literally chose my friends by what snacks they had in their cupboard. I'm going to go play at Tommy's because I know he's got, you know, certain foods that I really liked. And I did that type of stuff, believe it or not. And I went over a friend's house, and they still laugh at me today. Like, I went in his cupboards and saw what he had to eat in there. And I just went in his house, didn't even ask permission. And I came out with snack cakes in my hands. I was eating them. It was like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? That's just what you did. So anyway, so as I got older, food really became a crutch to me. Food was really helping me in situations where I felt very uncomfortable. So if I was at a party, again, being very shy, what do? You lean on food, and food would get me by. So those were the things that I did with food. It was also a crutch for me for when I was stressed. So as I got older and as I started my career, I really did, you know, through work, I just couldn't cope with it. And we ended up getting married, and married to a wonderful woman now for 27 years. And two wonderful kids. But when we first had those kids, it was extremely difficult, and I couldn't manage, I couldn't cope, and I really relied on food. I really smiled a lot, and I still smile today. I love smiling, but when I smiled before program, it was all about wearing the mask, is that I really wasn't showing my true self. So I was showing it for other people, and that was... Yeah, that was just not who I was, you know. And I would have different masks too. I would have, you know, I would have the Bob face for the family. I would have a Bob face for the friends, you know, and the neighborhood, you know, friends. And then I would have the work Bob face, and you know, I would just be different people to different person to different people. Whatever they wanted me to be, that's who I would be, and that was how far the people pleasing went. So I got to the point where my weight would go up and down. I could lose 65 pounds like a champion. I had no issues with that. I could diet for 6 months, and I didn't think I had any issues at all. You know, I really, you know, what was the issue for me was that I just couldn't understand that what I was doing, there was anything wrong with what I was doing, you know. I didn't understand that my relationship with food was abnormal, and I do see it as abnormal now. But back then, I just didn't think there was anything wrong, that I was just eating, and then you diet, you gain weight, and you diet, and you gain weight, and you diet. And I never ever plateaued. I never maintained a weight. You know, I'm sure most of you had similar closets as mine, where you had multiple sizes in your closet, depending on what weight you were at that time. And I refused to get new clothes that were bigger most of the time. And I, a lot of the times, even when I was dressed in a suit for work, I had to worry about splitting my pants. And in fact, I did do that. I split my pants. I had to worry about sitting on chairs and busting a chair, which I have done at a friend's house, and then felt extremely embarrassed and offered to pay for the chair that I broke. So these were the things that I was constantly, I was almost that I was hindered by that. So I couldn't live a full life because I was constantly either thinking about food or worrying about certain things, like how I was looking and what I was wearing. So it was a tremendous stress and tremendous mental burden. And at the same time, I needed the very thing that I was hurting myself with. I needed food because I had nothing else to go to. And that's why I didn't understand until later why diets never worked for me. You know, diets never worked for me because I was trying to fill, you know, a void with food, the very thing that I needed. So why I was restricting myself from the very thing that I needed, you know. So if my defense mechanisms and my go-to and my need is food, why would a diet ever work for a person like me? It wouldn't. It definitely wouldn't. And food at the time was my higher power. It absolutely was. It was food, money, sex, all of those things. Everything but God was my higher power. So I had what I thought was a heart attack one night, it ended up being, you know, not that, but I thought it was. It was pressure. I had pain in my chest, and it was shooting down my arm, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in my 30s, and this is happening to me. It's crazy. So I went to the doctor, and they said, you're not having a heart attack. He pushed on my chest and made me yell and says, you know, you're just fat. Thanks, doc. Appreciate that. I didn't know that. So I had hypertension, and basically, you know, he sent me to a nutritionist, and I again learned how to eat, and I still eat the same way as I learned. Yeah, I still eat pretty similar to that, but that wasn't going to work for me. I mean, that alone was not going to work for me. And I look back at that time and say, you know, okay, great, I lost the weight, but I immediately started gaining the weight right back, regardless of the health scare that I was having. And that was my last diet. I couldn't diet after that. And I gained weight, and I went into depression. And that's when you see the picture of me at 300 pounds. I was at that point where I just couldn't do it anymore. And I really believed that I was going to be a 300 pound man for the rest of my life. I absolutely did. And that I had no other choice. And I also was starting to believe that there was nothing wrong with that, which there absolutely is for a person like me. Because it wouldn't have stopped at 300 pounds. I would have gone to 400 pounds. I don't know if you'd like anything like me. I would always look at other people and say, you know what, that person over there, I think he's about 500 pounds. I'll worry if I ever start to look like him. And that's what I started doing. And how awful is that? You know, first I'm judging another person, and then I'm trying to compare myself and to make myself feel good at somebody else's expense. Is that really how I wanted to live? Absolutely not. But that's what I was doing. So I got to the point where I was grabbing at the rolls of my fat, and I was having, you know, dreams of cutting that fat off with kitchen shears, literally thinking about doing that, but too chicken because I would bleed to death, right? You know, that wouldn't work. But I never really had a thought of committing suicide, but I was at the point where I just was so desperate, and just, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was married at the time, and I finally had my last binge at a friend's house. We were watching football, and I just remember it. I just woke up the next day. It was a Monday. It was Sunday that you were partying, and I woke up on Monday, and I can't stand myself anymore. And I had looked up OA.org and found a meeting near me. The website, very important to me and my story. And that's why I'm really so grateful for the web and all the people that do that, so you can find the meetings that we need to find. And I picked up the phone and I called Doris, like I mentioned earlier, and she picked up the phone and said, yeah, come to the meeting. And I was so glad to go to the meeting, and I felt so good. I really was courageous to do that, but you know, to me, I had no other choice. I just had hit rock bottom. So I had walked into the room, and there was about 20 people there, and I was like, wow. And I'd say all but me and one other person were women, as is the case. But I was still undaunted. I was like, okay. The other guy was a newcomer also. So I heard what I needed to hear. I told you I was very shy, so I didn't say a word, not a word. But inside, I felt what you guys were saying. First, I said, I can't share like that. Oh my gosh, they're bearing their soul. And they share so well. Oh my gosh. You know, I couldn't do that. And I didn't do that. I had a hard time sharing. But I listened, and I had tears in my eyes before I left that meeting. And I knew I was in the right place. I was like, oh my gosh, these people are just like me. This is so awesome. This is so crazy. You know, we're all screwed up together. And so that's really how I felt. I was just so happy. So I kept coming back to that meeting. You know, couldn't find a sponsor there because I did ask, and the woman said no. And I said, I was crushed by that, of course. But I kept coming back. And then finally, I had a binge. A sugar binge, which is my binge, one of my binge trigger foods, which I didn't know at the time because I didn't have a sponsor and I didn't have a food plan. All I was doing was dieting and going to a meeting at that time. but it was a start. So that angel I was telling you about finally said, you know what? I think you need to go to the meetings. I think I'm going to also maybe meet me at this location. I didn't know it was Intergroup. I didn't know what it was. She meet me here and I'm going to introduce you to some men. And she did. And that really, you know, that started it off. That was the kickoff for me. Oh my gosh. I met a sponsor. I met somebody who really was able to guide me and showed me the steps. You know, my gosh. But he also showed me, and I will mention it for the guys out there. He showed me to a men's meeting. I went to a men's meeting. And the only reason why I mention it is because it was important for me to find other guys, not just to have the other guys, but it was also important for me because I couldn't share in front of all these women. So I was able to share openly with these guys. And then when I felt comfortable, I went back to that meeting that I had trouble sharing at, and I was able to share at that meeting. And I started feeling comfortable. I started feeling very comfortable in mixed company and mixed meetings. So that was great. That was really something I needed. So as I started working the steps, well, first, you know, my sponsor happened to be what's called a house sponsor. I'm not sure you've heard of it. If you haven't, it just means, the acronym means honest, open-minded, and willing. But that at the time, you know, that form of OA was a special focus meeting as well. And so we were staying away from sugar and flour and weighing and measuring my food. And believe it or not, I still do that today. Sugar and flour just happen to be, you know, my binge foods. And there was a very strict food plan at the time, but it was phased out. It was called Gray Sheet, and that's no longer part of the program. But I did find a food plan that worked for me. And I am so grateful for the flexibility of OA that it doesn't matter. I tell my sponsees now, it doesn't matter what you eat. I really don't care. As long as you're not eating your binge foods and you're willing to commit to what you're saying. For me, the food plan was all about commitment. It was a commitment that I was going to, committing my food before I ate it was a huge deal for me. I was like, wait a minute, I went to a nutritionist and it's a food diary. I was putting stuff down after I ate it. And OA is kind of the reverse. It's like, I got to plan ahead. That's big. You know, and I started doing that, and I was like, okay, this is cool. I actually like doing this now. And if I'm going out to eat, I can bring my scale and I can plan, you know, what I'm going to eat, and I can ask ahead what someone is planning to serve. And I don't feel bad about that anymore because why? I'm taking care of myself. And when I bring my scale out to meals, I know I'm getting enough. And you know, reason why I still weigh my food is because it's not just my eyes are broken. I can't really tell. I can get pretty close now, but you know what? It's about eating the proper portion sizes for me. And my head will tell me that the portion is too big at lunch, but too small at dinner time. It'll play. I don't want to play head games. And that's really what my head will do to me. And that's why I love the scale, is because like, I'm not getting, getting exactly what I need. And it's so freeing, you know, it's just a release. It's like, great, I got what I need. And that's what I need to do. So yeah, 16 years later, I'm still weighing and measuring my food. So I'm really happy about that. So I found a lot of hope in that first meeting. And every meeting that I went to after that, I still find a tremendous amount of hope. My sponsor gave me hope. He first said that he believes that everybody, you know, could use a 12-step program. And I really believe him. We're all screwed up in some way. You know, we all are all addicts in some way. And having a higher power to help us absolutely is a beautiful thing. So when I came in, though, I felt powerless. But I didn't necessarily surrender. So that was the first thing for me to do, was to surrender. So when I was able to really grasp of what was going on, I was like, okay, I am absolutely powerless over food, and I surrender it. And I need help. You know, I need help. And so I first started with my sponsors, like, okay, help me. You know, the food plan is a start. Okay, great. But finding that higher power was key in step two, because I did admit my life was unmanageable. It wasn't just the food, you know, it was life. It was everything. It was work. It was the craziness that was happening, and, you know, and how my attitude toward things and people and a negative attitude that I carried, that's not how I wanted to live. And to turn all that over to a higher power and to want to change was what the steps were all about. And I was so grateful for that. It wasn't just about food anymore, you know, it was about how I was living my life and how I was treating other people. And that was so important to understand and to actually want to do. Wanted to change and wanted to be a better person. And that's what the steps helped me to do. So finding a higher power, what I thought was going to be easy because I had God as my higher power when I came in the program. But what was wonderful was that I was able to look at that and to change that perception of God into what I needed him to be for me in OA. You know, God was always there for me. And what my visual is that you can imagine, you know, having a windshield in front of you, you know, and God's on the other side and you're on one side. And, you know, there were so many years where I put other things in front of God, you know, food, you know, I said money, sex, all these things. It was like people throwing mud on the windshield. That's what I was doing. I was cluttering it up and I couldn't see God. But the steps really acts as the wiper blades and started wiping all that away. And God was still there on the other side, just waiting for me, waiting for me to ask. He was there the whole time. So what I did was like, okay, what should I tell my sponsees now? What do I want God to be for me? You know, is it friend? You know, absolutely. You know, is it someone that I can talk to and ask for guidance? Yes, absolutely. But I also had to realize that there is a vertical relationship. He is a higher power to me. And that was also important too, to respect that as well. So I have a tremendous relationship with my higher power, which keeps growing each and every day. So I surrendered my will and my life over to my higher power in step three. And I continue to do that and say that prayer daily. So steps 4 through 9, what a challenge, but what a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful challenge. Going through step 4 was tough at first, to facing those things that I had done in the past. And a lot of it was the shame that I felt. But when I realized, when I gave those things away to my sponsor in step 5, that he had done some of the very same things. And that's what I love about having a sponsor. It's like, yeah, yeah, I've done that. Or yeah, I've done worse. And here, let me share a little bit of that with you. And so I don't need to put, you know, my sponsor on a pedestal, and my sponsees don't put me on a pedestal, because we're in this together. You know, a sponsor's a guide, and that's all. And you know, it's not that that's all, but you know, it's my program to work. I learned early on that I had to take ownership of my program. Because when I first started, I was, you know, I was writing questions and I was doing steps and that's what I was doing. I was like, I wanted to, it was almost like I was doing homework for the teacher at some points. And I was like, wait a minute, who am I doing this for my sponsor, or am I doing this for me? This is my program, you know, and I started making those type of decisions. Even when it came to the foods, I was like, you know what, I think I'm having an issue with, you know, with sweeteners, you know, with chewing, with sugar-free gum and those type of things. Maybe I need to stay away from that. I'm also having an issue with caffeine. Maybe I need to stay away. So I was taking ownership and saying, these are the things that I believe that I need to do for my program. And it was like a turning point for me. It was like, I started having pride in my program, you know, and it was great. So that was important for me too. And I hope that you also can do something like that. And, you know, if you're working it just for your sponsor, there's something wrong with that relationship. So going through those steps, 6 and 7, especially, I call them my favorite steps, because that's where the change really blossomed for me. You know, to be entirely ready to have God remove my shortcomings was like, wow. I thought, I was like, okay, no big deal. Sure, I'm ready. I mean, I turn this over to my sponsors. You know, I'm absolutely ready to have these gone. And I just really wanted, you know, the effects of what happened from those defects to be gone. I didn't really want the defects to be gone. And because I was like realizing, you know, who am I going to be? Who am I going to be if these defects are really gone? And I was like, wow, I'm going to, all the fun Bob's going to be gone. I got nothing left. So I started thinking, is like, okay, you know what? This really is an opportunity for me. God's given me an opportunity, you know, to change. And I started looking at it that way. It's like, okay, yeah, if these things are gone, what are the good things that God is going to fill me up with, you know, and what are the things that who can I be now, and the change and the possibilities. And I started looking at it that way. I was like, okay, God, I know whatever, you know, when you remove these things from me, there's going to be some more wonderful things to replace them. And that's how steps 6 and 7 really worked for me in a nutshell. I was so grateful to have God mold me into to be the person that he wants me to be. You know, part of my purpose in life now is to be a maximum service to God and to others, as it says in the big book. I really do believe that is the case for me. That is purpose for me. I felt that I did not have a purpose in life before OA. I felt very useless. My self-esteem was very low. When I went to Intergroup and they needed help with, they didn't have a website chair, and they have a website up, and they looked around and said, who can help us with the website? And I was like, who has experience in website? I was like, I have one day of a class. I took a one-day class. I raised my hand, sold, you're going to be the website chair. And I was like, okay, great. And that service helped me tremendously. It built up my self-esteem. And I was like, okay, and I don't have to do this perfectly because, hey, nobody else knows any better anyway. So I was able to get the website up, and someone else then took it later, you know, did the service even more. But I felt really good that I was able to help with that. And then I moved on to other positions and got involved in outreach. And then I got involved as treasurer, and I got involved as chair, which I had a couple of terms as chair in my South Jersey intergroup. And then I moved on to being a Region 7 rep. We're in Region 7 in New Jersey. So I became a Region 7 rep and did service that way. I went to World Service and was a delegate there, and got involved in the Bylaws Committee, Finance Committee, Outreach Committee there, and was even a committee co-chair at one point for the Finance Committee, and I believe even the Outreach Committee. But all that service has just been amazing for me to do those things. Now I am in region, I became the Region 7 treasurer, and now I am the Region 7 vice chair. And we just had our Region 7 convention last weekend, and I was involved in that committee. So just service has been wonderful. There's no doubt it helps me, it keeps me abstinent. There's no doubt, because I don't want to lose the ability to do service. And being abstinent allows me to do that. So I do want to pitch service for sure. And I pitch being a sponsor as well, because I'm not going to tell my sponsee to do something if I'm not going to do it myself. So when I'm working the steps with my sponsees, I'm like, yeah, maybe I need to do a 10th step. Maybe I need to do a little bit of more work here. So I really do, it's great being a sponsor. So back to the steps. So steps 8 and 9, in fact, I'm working the steps again in a workshop using the new 12-step workshop and study guide. We're doing it as a group. It's great. And I use that with my sponsees now as well. And so we're on steps 8 and 9. And really, steps 8 and 9 are extremely daunting at first, especially when you're doing step four, you were looking ahead to step nine. So I try not to do that anymore and just say, I'm working the step that I'm in, right? So step eight and being, you know, entirely being ready to make the amends. And step eight is really about forgiveness. And because it's funny, because I had made an amends to my sister at one point and then saw her again a year later and apologized and made amends again. And she's like, Bob, you've already apologized for this. I've forgiven you. And I'm like, I got it. I went back and talked to my sponsor and said, you know what? I haven't forgiven myself. So to truly take step eight is to forgive yourself and forgive others, to clear all of that away so I can freely make that amends in step nine and to not to carry any of that. So that's a wonderful gift. You know, steps 10, 11 are wonderful gifts of prayer, meditation. Step 10 is reviewing, you know, my day, what went well, what didn't go so well, what do I need to take back through the steps. And then step 12 is just wonderful, carrying the message, but also living the principles in all my affairs. And that is extremely difficult, but a wonderful, wonderful gift. I did want to share a little bit about breaking through some of the fear that I've had over the years and how a simple retreat that I went to years ago was a great gift. And it was a talent show, and I know you guys have one tomorrow night. So I say this because if someone's ever thinking about doing a talent show and is too shy or too afraid to do that, I'm really encouraged to do that because I actually did that. I sang and I do like to sing, but I'm very shy and didn't want to get up in front of a crowd. And, you know, I was able to do that at a talent show at a retreat. And I say that because I don't know how good I was or whatever. It didn't really matter at the time. It was just the fact that I did it. And you guys were just so awesome and so accepting. It really didn't matter if I stunk or not, because you were going to, you know, cheer for me no matter what. And you did. And it was great. Same with dancing. I'm not a dancer. But in any opportunity now that I have in an OA setting, I'm going to dance. You know, we have that at our Region 7 convention. Even last week, virtually, we had a virtual dance, you know, which was pretty cool. We're all dancing in our kitchen and our living room and, you know, whatever. We were having a great time. So I'm going to dance because I'm not afraid anymore to do that and live life. So that broke me out of my shell, that when I went out into the real world, you know, I joined a choir. You know, and I did some things which were, you know, I sang karaoke and, you know, on a ship in front of my family. And I was like, it was just cool. It was just cool to do things that, you know, I never thought were possible before. So speaking of that, I am a runner, and I'll show my shirt. It says husband, dad, and ultra runner. And I mentioned that because, you know, it's amazing what God can do. In my early 40s, I started running. I ran my first half marathon and liked that so much. I ran a marathon and I got linked up with a disabled child who I dedicate my miles to. And I started doing some fundraisers. So I decided to run 12 marathons in 12 months. And I did that. And I still have a wonderful relationship with this little girl. And I said, well, what can I do next? And so I decided to run a 50K or an ultra marathon of just 31 miles. And then I said, okay, after that, what do I do? And I ran a 50 miler, and I've done a couple of those. And this year I decided to try 100 miles. So I've just a couple of weeks ago just finished my third 100 miler this year, and my third overall. So it's really amazing what God can do. And, you know, it's all the glory to God to allow me to do that type of stuff. So I do want to share about my family briefly. You know, my youngest has come to us about being gay in the past. And then it went from being gay to being a transgender. So it's amazing what program can help and how strong our relationship has been as a family. So going from transgender and now transgender female to now non-binary, which I didn't know all of these terminology anyway. So identifying neither as male or female, So I share all these things with my sponsor and we talk about it. And I share all these things with my wife. And you know, like I said, my bond with my wife is just amazing. And you know, what we're able to do together. So I have some God stories, but I'll have to tell them to you another time. One quick one was that I was tired on my last 100-mile marathon. I was so tired. Because I told you I gave up caffeine and it took me almost 30 hours to finish this race. So I laid down for a nap on the side of the road and I was just so tired. I don't know how long I was asleep. And I had a friend of mine who was behind me. I don't know how far back. We got separated a while ago. And when I woke up from the nap, there was Fernando. There was my friend, you know, and I was able to run the last 10 miles of the race with him. It was like, I just thank you, God. Thank you, God. So I just want to end with, you guys are here. This is the beginning of a fabulous, fabulous weekend. So what's your plans? What is your plans? Are you willing to take that responsibility pledge? Are you willing to maybe break out of your shell? You know, are you willing to spend some time, you know, to find a sponsor if you don't have one? Are you willing to help someone out and be their sponsor if you don't have a sponsor, you're an available sponsor? Are you going to attend sessions? Are you going to make new friends? You know, are you willing to do those things? Are you going to practice self-care? Are you going to, you know, maybe do some quiet meditation? What is it that you need this weekend and what are you willing to do? So I just put that on your heart to really think about that and to say, what are you willing to get out of this weekend? So again, each one, reach one, share the hope. And thank you all for letting me share and being with you tonight.
Thank you, Bob. Well, wonderful share. We're going to open the floor for a question and answer session with Bob. So let's get started. From an anonymous attendee, really appreciate your share. How do you find yourself sharing your OA program with your children and people out of the program?
Great. Thank you for your question. So I break my own anonymity all the time. I don't have any problem doing that. So if someone has any interest in how I've lost weight over the years or some of how I share or the way that I eat or why do I carry a scale or why do I eat the way that I do, I don't have any problem with that at all and sharing about OA with them. As far as my children, they've been awesome since I was a kid. They would weigh, measure my food for me. It was like, okay, cool. You know, it was really, really wonderful. And we have a great and open relationship about that. And they support me and thankfully do not sabotage me, which I know other people don't have that type of support and they might get sabotaged. But I did have to lay down the law with my friends and say, you know what, if you're not going to support me on this, I'm not going to be coming around. If you're going to try to sabotage me and get me to eat those binge foods that I used to eat before, I'm sorry, I can't be with you guys anymore. So it was important for me. I even brought my own food to my mom's house one time and she didn't like that very much. So she told me that and said, Bob, tell me what you need me to make you and I will do that, but don't bring your own food ever again. So I had to laugh at that. So, but thank you. Thanks for the question.
This one's from Linda. What is an exercise bulimic?
Good question. Sorry, I didn't explain that. So for me, when I was before OA, I would restrict food and I would also exercise like crazy. That's how I would choose to purge, even though I didn't have a traditional bulimia, which, you know, would be to purge after eating. For me, the purging was to overexercise and to almost punish myself for the food that I was eating and to really get a high from losing the weight in that way. So I have to be careful with the overexercising. I do talk to my sponsor about it. And as you know, I'm a runner, so I have to be careful not to use running in that fashion and to continue to eat what I'm supposed to in my daily food plan. Thank you.
This one is from Ambrose P. Brand new in the program. I have a sponsor and I'm starting the steps via a 12-step workshop. As I'm sitting here, it hits me that if I do indeed recover through this program, I'll be in OA forever. How do you deal with the forevers getting in the way of taking things one day at a time?
Mm, Great question, and welcome to the program. Yeah, so it can be a barrier if you think that, oh my gosh, you know, my sponsor's in program 40 years this year, 40 years in program, 40 years in absence. If I thought about, it's like, gosh, that, you know, oh my gosh, 25 years from now, I'm still going to be in program. You know, it really is one day at a time. But I got to tell you that every day is a, such a gift. And I'm loving OA and all the beautiful things that I'm getting from this program, you know, just to hear what other people have to say and share and how they do their daily practice and what their spiritual guidance that they receive is just wonderful. So I really do focus on one day at a time, but I see the other people that are long timers and I'm like, wow, I want what they have. So what do I need to do? Keep coming back. Thanks.
This one's from Lori M. Really appreciated what you said about your HP, that is a vertical relationship. Can you speak more about a God of our own understanding?
Sure. You know, it's funny. I have some friends in OA, and one of them, one of their higher powers, their higher power was Santa Claus. I was like, Santa Claus, really? I was like, you know, it really doesn't matter who or what your higher power is, as long as it's not you. And I jokingly say to my sponsees, as long as you don't choose the chair, you know, or something like that, it's got to be something that I believe will keep me absent today. You know, so if it is the group or it is, you know, the aura in the room, you know, in the meeting rooms or whatever it is, I mean, it doesn't matter. It is just for me, it has to be something that I believe will keep me abstinent today. And some, not more than that, it's a, for me, I have to have a relationship that I pray to that higher power. And that's really what I need to be doing. And to really get the guidance from my higher power. I was extremely upset two nights ago about a family situation. And it was a parenting situation. I went out for a run. An hour later, I came back with a totally different perspective. Because I prayed and turned over the situation. I was trying to control a situation in my family based on my experience as a child, and I was trying to portray that onto my children. So to really let go of that and let my higher power guide me, and then to take that and come back to my wife and say, guess what God told me on this run, you know, and that was just a great thing to be able to listen and to let go of the control. Thanks.
Bob, there are a couple questions about your daily spiritual or your daily 11th step routine or practice.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you for the question because time was running short and I wasn't able to really share that. But of course, it is so important to me to start my day. You know, I start my day almost reciting, you know, pages 86 to 88 in the big book, and to ask God to direct my thinking. I do get on my knees in the morning and surrender. First thing, as I say, I surrender this day to you, God. And I don't just surrender the day. I also surrender everything that I think, the expectations that I have of this day, the expectations of who you are, God, the expectations of what you would have me do today, God. And then I just say, God, fill me with all of the things that you want me to do today, and to really, you know, so really that I'm living my life for you, you know, and to free me from that bondage that I have of myself. So that was really how I start my day. I do pray all throughout the day. I do use the Serenity Prayer all throughout the day. I've learned to say the Serenity Prayer when I'm going into a difficult meeting, and even when I'm picking up the phone sometimes, because in the past I used to pick up the phone and I would really get unnerved by the conversation if it was an aggressive or an adversarial person. And I would just, the rest of the day, I used to be feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel awful now. I felt so good earlier. And I realized it was me that let go of my peace. God had given me peace. I was the one that chose to let it go from that phone call. So don't let go of the peace, Bob. Hold on to that peace. God gave it to you for a reason. So there are some of the things that I do throughout the day.
This is from Bob B. What was the most difficult step for you and why?
Yeah, my sponsor would say this the last part of step 12, which is practicing principles in all your affairs. I say it's step 6 and 7, and they're my favorite because they were so difficult for me. Because I think when you go through a challenge with your higher power, it is that much more meaningful. And that's almost why I like doing ultra marathons, because, you know, knowing that God can get me through 100 miles, it's like, it's amazing to me. So going through steps 6 and 7 and the change and the conversion and the amount of really, really just really thinking about what I need to do to change and to be a better person, that was not easy for me. And it reminds me of the teacup story that I've shared before, and I'd heard in our step study about being a lump of clay. And then that lump of clay, you know, is looking at a teacup that's on the shelf and says, I wish I could be as beautiful as you are. But the lump of clay had to go, the teacup shared the story about what they had to go through, the formation and being in a fiery, you know, stove and to be painted and all of these things and being manipulated. Well, that's basically what steps in 6 and 7 is being willing to change. If you want to be the teacup, you're starting out as a lump of clay. You have to be willing to change. And that was very difficult for me. And when I finally embraced it, I was so happy. Thanks.
Well, Bob, thank you. That was a fast 15 minutes. And everyone, I'm sorry we didn't get to your questions. We appreciate all of them. And Bob, I want to thank you again for being with us tonight. Quick things I want to mention before we close. There are a couple of resources we want you to know about in Region 1. The first is our virtual sponsorship program. Region 1 offers a matching service for virtual sponsoring. To find out more, you can go to our website, oaregion1.org. Region 1 also maintains a speaker list. Now that there are no travel costs involved in getting to faraway meetings, how about bringing some of your experience, strength, and hope to a new meeting in Region 1? You can add your name if you are willing to speak, or you can request a copy of the speaker list. Check out how on the Region 1 website, oaregion1.org. And after a moment of silence, why don't we close with a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference.